This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhibi in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The Europeans and the Africans both see this as really necessary for the stability, not just of Libya and North Africa, but the Sahel and Europe, because you have so many migrants trying to get to Europe, and you have people pouring out of the Sahel. So it's a real problem.
That's VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir on concern at the UN General Assembly over the ongoing conflict in Libya. Details coming up. Also, the United Nations Refugee Agency says a surge in violent, brutal attacks by armed groups in northwest Nigeria is sending thousands of refugees fleeing to Niger. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the 74th session of the UN General Assembly. Was a big week for African nations, according to VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir. She talked with me from New York about a number of topics discussed at the assembly, including Ebola and the war in Libya. But she starts out with what she terms a success story in Sudan.
We have this transition of power from Omar Hassan al-Bashir to the transitional government to Prime Minister Hamdok. He's here this week. He's brought his female foreign minister, the first female foreign minister from Sudan. And earlier this week, they signed an agreement with the United Nations for them to open a human rights office in Sudan. They're going to have a head office in Khartoum and then four field offices in places like Darfur and South Kordofan. And the UN really wants to make human rights an embedded part of this transition, and they see, you know, challenges are ahead. The economy is struggling. There's a lot of things that need to be done in Sudan, but it really has the potential to be an African success story.
Now, the Ethiopian president mentioned that Sudan should be removed from the list of nations that were terrorist list.
Right, and there is a call from countries here in Africa. They want Sudan removed from the terrorism list and also for sanctions to be lifted.
Talk to us about Libya.
So a lot of concern about Libya this week. The situation has been on a downward spiral since April when General Haftar moved his forces east towards Tripoli. There's been a lot of fighting in Tripoli. People have been displaced. There's been attacks on detention centers where many African migrants are being held. So it's a very concerning situation, and it's a sad situation because in April, when the fighting broke out, Libya was really on the cusp of making progress in its political process. There had been agreements made, and then Haftar moved on Tripoli, and everything went away. So there was a meeting here Thursday night chaired by Italy and France, by their foreign ministers, and several countries involved. And really, the point is there's no military solution in Libya, and they want to get a ceasefire and move towards an international conference that will propel and pressure the Libyan parties to move into intra-Libyan talks with and have the AU involved in those to get back on track, to get back to where they were in April, just before Haftar moved on Tripoli. And the Europeans and the Africans both see this as really necessary for the stability, not just of Libya and North Africa, but the Sahel and Europe, because you have so many migrants trying to get to Europe, and you have people pouring out of the Sahel. So it's a real problem.
And moving along, Margaret, the World Health Organization chief, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, said the second deadliest Ebola outbreak in history is on the retreat, but he warned that any attack by the many armed groups in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo could affect health workers' hard-won gains. Talk to us about the Ebola outbreak and what's being done.
Well, we heard from DRC's President Felix Tshisekedi on Thursday. He said the situation is very serious, but the new response strategy is bearing fruit, especially in Goma in the east, which he said is safe from the virus. He said much has been done, but Ebola has not yet been eradicated. There are five new medications that have been approved to treat it, plus the Ebola vaccine. So he says that will help them completely eradicate the virus. But it's been a very complex outbreak because it is taking place in the east of the country where there's insecurity because of the armed group.
VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir talking to me from UN headquarters in New York. This week, VOA's Peter Cloete has been talking with African leaders and top officials at the UN General Assembly, asking about their priorities for this year's gathering. High on that list has been coping with and limiting climate change. Edgar Lungu, the president of Zambia, explained his country, like most in Africa, must balance the need to fight climate change with the need for energy to fuel economic growth.
When we talked to each other, it was very clear that if you want to industrialize, I think you need energy. And what form of energy do you need? And we have realized that hydro energy is the trickery. It's treacherous, if I may use the word. You know, 1 minute you have lots of water, the next minute you have no water, your production of power goes down, like Zambia. And so you need to have a good mix of the various forms of energy. But how many of us didn't know way back that we need a lot of energy to industrialize? But I'm glad that this is a wake-up call.
Manuel Domingo Augusto, Angola's foreign minister, says a large part of his country is coping with severe drought. Climate change, he says, may make such dangerous weather patterns more common.
So that's why Angola, as most, if not all, of African countries, we join those of them that are absolutely right that we must do, act, and not talk about the climate change.
As part of its efforts to protect its forests, Gabon's government recently signed an agreement with Norway, which will provide up to $150 million to help Gabon reduce carbon dioxide emissions. Lee White, Gabon's Minister of Forestry, says the agreement recognizes that Gabon has been working to protect its forests while absorb emissions. One significant element of the deal, he says, is that it doubles prices for forest carbon dioxide absorption to $10 a ton.
So overnight, we double the price of forest carbon. It gives a lot of hope to all the other forest nations. And if on public sector money from Norway we can get up to $10, then we hope that with the private sector we can go to $15 or $20. So it sets a challenge to the private sector now to come in and maybe take us closer to the true value of carbon dioxide emissions from forests.
Those are some of the comments African leaders have made to VOA's Peter Cloete about their priorities this week at the UN General Assembly. Police have freed more than 300 male students from an Islamic school in northern Nigeria where they had been chained and allegedly tortured. 66 staffers and the owner of the school in Kaduna City were arrested during a police raid yesterday. Parents had taken their children there to learn the Quran and undergo rehabilitation for drug abuse. Parents said they were unaware of the abuse and were only allowed to visit every 3 months and only outside the school. Kaduna State Police spokesman Yakubu Sabot told AFP that the students ranging in age from 9 to upper teens were kept in the most debasing and inhumane conditions. The students described beatings, whippings, and sexual abuse, and some bore injuries consistent with abuse. Police said they found a torture chamber where students were chained, hung, and beaten. Efforts were underway to find the parents of the children who are being held in a temporary camp at a stadium in Kaduna. The United Nations Refugee Agency says a surge in violent, brutal attacks by armed groups in northwest Nigeria is sending thousands of refugees fleeing to Niger. It says the situation is creating a new humanitarian emergency along the two countries' borders. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency reports more than 40,000 Nigerians have fled to Niger over the last 10 months. It says about half of them have arrived since the end of May. On one day alone, September 11th, it says more than 2,500 civilians targeted by armed groups in Nigeria fled for their lives. The UNHCR says civilians are being indiscriminately attacked. The agency says it has received frequent reports of kidnappings, torture, extortion, murder, sexual violence, and destruction of houses and property. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balosh tells VOA the armed groups unleashing this terror on civilians are not linked to the Boko Haram insurgency. Since 2009, the Islamic militant group has killed more than 30,000 people, displaced millions, and created one of the world's largest humanitarian crises. Balor says refugees arriving in Niger are traumatized.
They tell us these groups are really well organized and well armed, and they kind of operate at will. They go from house to house, villages to villages, killing people, destroying property, and then getting away with these horrible acts.
Balor says he does not know the identity of the armed groups, although he says they include bandits and other criminal elements. He says some attackers have taken people hostage, holding them for ransom. Media reports suggest ethnic conflict between Fulani traditional herders and Hausa farmers plays a role in the violence. The conflict has caused the deaths of more than 4,000 people since 2011. And Nigerian security experts report the Fulani-Hausa conflict is expected to claim more lives this year than Boko Haram aggression. Balor says aid is being rushed to the Niger border regions, and emergency staff is on hand to respond to the humanitarian needs. He says the UNHCR is working with local authorities to relocate refugees from the border to safer places inland. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
17 past the hour, you were listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Demonstrators against Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi staged flash protests in several cities today to avoid extremely tight security. The protests lasted just a few minutes, then participants ran away, but some clashes were reported with police firing tear gas. Pro-government supporters held counter-rallies. Protests and other forms of dissent have been the subject of a major crackdown since Sisi took power in 2013. Cairo's Tahrir Square, the center of the Arab Spring uprising in 2011, was sealed off by security forces. Police vehicles patrolled some main streets, stopping pedestrians, motorbike riders, and cars to check IDs, phones, or laptops for anti-regime content. The protests are a follow-up to demonstrations in several cities last weekend. Human rights groups say more than 3,000 people, mostly young men, have been arrested since then, though Egypt's general prosecutor claims his office has questioned no more than 1,000. An Egyptian businessman living in self-imposed exile sparked the protests with corruption allegations against Sisi and some military commanders. Sisi has denied the allegations. Sudanese victims of war crimes filed a criminal complaint yesterday against French bank BNP for alleged complicity in a slew of human rights abuses committed by Sudan's regime. For VOA, Lisa Bryant has more from Paris on the case supported by U.S. and French rights groups.
This is not the first time BNP Paribas has been targeted over its dealings with Sudan. In 2015, a U.S. judge sentenced the bank to 5 years of probation and nearly $9 billion after it pleaded guilty to violating United States sanctions against not only Sudan, but also Iran and Cuba. This case is different. Rights activists say it's the first effort to hold the bank criminally responsible for alleged complicity in crimes against humanity, genocide, and torture in Sudan between 2002 and 2008. It says BNP was essentially acting as the de facto central bank for the regime of former President Omar al-Bashir during that period by allowing it access to financial markets.
These crimes do not occur in a vacuum with no funds.
Cynthia Tai is executive director of U.S.-based nonprofit Project Expedite Justice, one of the rights groups supporting the Sudanese victims in the case.
They occur because people can buy weapons, because people can buy trucks, because people can buy the tools that they need to commit these grave violations.
The International Criminal Court issued arrest warrants against Bashir on war crimes and genocide charges in Sudan's Darfur region, but has been unable to prosecute him in The Hague. The ousted leader is on trial in his home country on corruption charges.
We can take him to the court, and I think that would be the first step.
Abdel Halim Hassan is one of the Sudanese filing the complaint. He says the government-backed Janjaweed militia attacked his village in Darfur numerous times, killing people, including his relatives. Later, as a student rights activist, he says he was imprisoned and tortured. He now lives in the United States.
My journey to the justice is going to be long, not only the bank, but to bring the real criminals to the court.
BNP could not be reached for comment Thursday afternoon, but a spokesperson told AFP news agency it was not aware a criminal probe had been opened and did not comment on judicial processes. This is not the first effort to hold French businesses responsible for rights abuses committed overseas. Authorities here are looking into whether Lafarge cement manufacturer paid the Islamic State group to keep its factories running in areas it controlled in Syria. Anjali Suwali is a lawyer for the Paris-based International Federation for Human Rights, which is also supporting the Sudanese victims.
We hope that by taking a step that we have today, we've put these companies on notice that they need to be aware that these types of business deals are risky.
French investigating magistrates must now determine whether the Sudanese complaint is admissible and whether to open an investigation. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The leader of a Zimbabwe doctors group that have been staging a stay-home strike for higher wages has arrived in South Africa for medical treatment after allegedly being kidnapped and tortured for almost a week. Peter Magombe was found disoriented after being dumped on a street near Harare more than a week ago. He is expected to be examined by psychologists and neurologists. Police initially prevented Magombe from leaving the country despite a court order allowing him to do so. The court reaffirmed its permission Wednesday and the doctor departed yesterday. Human rights groups and the U.S. Embassy have called for the government to strongly pursue the roughly 50 abductions of labor activists and civil leaders this year. No arrests have been made. The government has denied accusations that it is using the kidnappings as an intimidation tactic. A group of 66 refugees from Sudan, Somalia, and Eritrea were freed from detention in Libya and flown to Rwanda last night. The UN Refugee Agency chartered the flight. Lisa Schlein has more from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
This is the first group of refugees to benefit from a so-called emergency transit mechanism agreed to earlier this month by Rwanda, the UNHCR, and the African Union. UN Refugee Agency spokesman Baba Balosh tells VOA his agency expects and hopes to continue the evacuations. He notes Rwanda's refugee center has the capacity to care for 500 people.
But it doesn't mean that Rwanda will only have 500. We hope that as people come in, they're able to find solutions and move to safer locations. And we hope that in the coming days and weeks, we are able to fly out more refugees from Libya to safety.
Baller says the UNHCR has registered more than 3,000 refugees in Libyan detention centers. However, he notes, more than 5,000 refugees and migrants are being held under brutal, appalling conditions in government-run facilities. He says 26 of the 66 refugees flown to Rwanda are children, nearly all of them unaccompanied. He says one of the evacuees has not been outside a detention center for more than 4 years. He says the refugees are registered and given documentation upon arrival in Kigali. They are then transferred to a transit center in Gashora, 60 kilometers south of the capital, where they are provided with accommodation, food, water, and other basic relief items.
A team of 9 health professionals, including a psychologist, will work alongside counselors specialized in working with children and survivors of sexual violence to provide health care and assist evacuees who survived torture, sexual violence, and human rights abuses during their time in Libya.
Baller says the entire group has been granted asylum seeker status while their refugee claims are being assessed. This, he says, gives them the same rights as other refugees in Rwanda. They will be able to access education, health care, and work. He adds anyone who is not considered a refugee and in need of international protection will be either helped to return home or given the possibility of regularizing his or her status in Rwanda. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Zimbabwe's biggest new media convention, the Hava'an UN Conference, opened today against the backdrop of the country's harsh economic climate. The conference has in the past probed internet freedom and free speech in Zimbabwe, as well as providing support for innovative startups through a seed funding pitch competition. Reporter Kuzaiza Nwashi has the details.
Munyaradzi Dodo is with Magamba Network, a non-profit organization that uses creative forms of youth activism to open up democratic space in Zimbabwe. He explains the Hava'an Conference.
The Hava'an Conference has been running since 2012. It's a new media, civic tech, and journalism platform. It came from a need in the space to have a platform where young people can get together, find out the new trends, interact with international speakers, international experts, local experts, regional experts.
He says the idea always has been to empower young people and help them network with established experts and individuals to whom they don't usually get access.
Find out what's happening in journalism, what are the latest technologies in tech, and chart a way forward and help them develop their own ideas into practical startups. Also on the sidelines, we have a startup competition where we give a seed funding to some startups. As you know, it's difficult to raise money in Zimbabwe for startups, so we help media startups to get some level of seed funding.
The event happens on the sidelines of an urban cultural festival. Dodo says there will be other workshops at an conference to cater for those in the music business and amplify the women's movement in the creative sector.
Also, we have a music business workshop to help artists who are in the industry navigate how that industry works, share best practices and insights and experiences. We also have a Women Create World Summit for women in the creative industry to come, just to create a safe space for women to get together and share ideas, strategies on how and how to make money, what's working, what's not working.
He adds that because there are not enough spaces for young people to interact with lawmakers, some lawmakers will speak at the event with the goal of enlightening the youthful audience on how laws are made. Some of the speakers at the two-day event are Zimbabweans from international media houses. Event organizers say they hope this will inspire aspiring young media players attending the event. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports, or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.